Another trade shock for markets on Thursday, only this time a positive one. China, surprising with its best numbers since March. Exports were up over 3% year-on-year in July. Economists had penciled a sharp drop. It made for a change. Still recovering from their recent rout, Europe's main bourses notched up early gains of close to a percent after Wednesday's modest rises. But the events that triggered that rout, US tariff threats and China's reciprocal currency moves, are still being felt.
Uber on Thursday reported its largest quarterly loss of over $5 billion, sending shares of the company plunging after the closing bell. Revenue came in lower than expected as the company failed to show benefits from an easing price war. Also hitting the bottom line, huge expenses related to the company's public offering earlier this year. The company has not yet made clear when, if ever, it will make a profit.
Kraft Foods dropped another bombshell Thursday. The packaged food maker is writing down the value of several business units by over $1 billion. That includes the shrunken value of top brands like Velveeta and Cool Whip. This comes atop the $15 billion write-down of its Kraft and Oscar Mayer brands taken in February. Packaged food companies like Kraft have had a hard time adjusting to the changing tastes of consumers who seek healthier, fresher alternatives to processed food.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's August the 9th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell, another business day getting underway. Lots going on in the world of business, and we'll try to hit as much of it as we can this morning. We'll get to the numbers from around the world on the markets in just a minute. On the program today, Susan Silvest will be back with us, Chief Investment Officer at Murphy and Silvest. We'll go over some of the latest in the U.S.-China trade war, talk a little bit about our portfolios, and see what is coming in the day ahead on Wall Street. Susan will be with us at 5:00, just in a couple of minutes here this morning as we begin, and for our first segment this morning. A little bit later in the program, Madhu Unnikrishnan will be here, editor of the Skift Airline Weekly at skift.com. We will have a conversation about how the latest quarter went for the airline industry and whether there was the trouble that was predicted from the first quarter in the second quarter. That'll be at about 5:38 this morning, so stay tuned. We've got a really good show for you, but first let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. And the opening bell rings this morning after stocks closed things out on a positive note yesterday. China's better-than-expected trade data and rebounded bond yields helped the major indices recover most of the week's losses. The Dow Jones Industrials rose nearly 370 points. The NASDAQ was up 176. The S&P 500 added about 54 points. This morning, as we look at the markets, though, there is some weakness in the futures market heading to 8:30 Chicago time. Dow futures up down around 118 points this morning, nearly a half a percent. S&P futures are off more than a half a percent. NASDAQ futures are off nearly three quarters of a percent this morning, down about 58 points. Around the globe this morning, markets are mixed. In Asia, the Nikkei ending the day up nearly 91 points. Nearly a half a percent, but in Hong Kong, lower by 181 points, down nearly a half a percent, and China off as well. In Europe, we see lots of red on the screen this morning. In London, off nearly a half a percent, the FTSE down 30. In Germany, off 115 points, down nearly a full percent, and in France, off nearly 50 points, down nearly a full percent as well. And oil is trading at $52.82 a barrel in the U.S., which is about 28 cents higher. Also, gold at $15.1490 an ounce, up about $5.40. As we begin this morning, we have some news. You heard in the opening montage the situation at Kraft Heinz, the company yesterday with some troubling earnings numbers, and its latest tumble begs the question, is Kraft Heinz a good buy or is it a sell? Nearly $15 billion. The biggest value of the brand writing down the value of its two biggest brands, Kraft and Oscar Mayer, by $15 billion. The food giant writing down its assets by another $1.2 billion. Analysts question whether it can turn around brands like Maxwell House and others, and what's that going to cost, and what the message is being sent from investors. In the after-hours trading, Kraft Heinz is down another 0.5% after dropping nearly 9% yesterday at $28.22 a share. A class-action lawsuit accuses General Motors of using diesel engines in its 2011 to 2012, 2016 model years, GMC and Chevy trucks that aren't compatible with diesel fuel in the United States. Uber shares fell in after-hours trading after missing Wall Street targets for the second quarter in its earnings report. The company reported an adjusted loss of nearly $4.72 a share. That's more than a dollar off the $3.19 that analysts had expected. It reported revenues of $3.1 $6 billion, Wall Street expecting $3.36 billion. Uber stock down more than 4% in after-hours trading on the news. Let's begin this morning with Susan Silvest, Chief Investment Officer at Murphy and Silvest in Dallas. Susan, good morning. Welcome back to the opening bell.
Good morning. Good morning.
Yeah, so where do we begin this morning? It looks like the markets might be reacting this morning to the China currency situation. Is that your read as well?
The markets are reacting to multiple variables right now. We have China, we have the currency, we have interest rates here domestically, where we're only 9 basis points off of a yield curve inversion from the 2-year to the 10-year. So, and we have Uber leading the pack by missing its earnings dramatically. So the market's going to react to what happened overseas, which today is mixed. But we also have, just as you said, the currency battle. That seems to be somewhat settling itself, although China and the United States will continue a battle till September 1 comes to determine who has the upper hand in this tariff negotiation. That's going to impact our market until that date.
Do you have a sense who does have the upper hand in this fight?
Well, that's an interesting question. We have two very strong personalities. So I do not know the answer to that question. I would say that depending on not the day, not the hour, but the moment by moment, as to who tends to flex their muscles more stronger. The challenge I see is neither one of our country, our president, or their administration is willing to cave or to show any sign of weakness. That ends up oftentimes in a stalemate. In that case, in that stalemate, China has the upper hand. We need them to agree. And so they, unfortunately, have the upper hand in the long run.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, it seems the tit for tat is moment by moment. Yesterday, when we thought things were going pretty well to end the day in the markets here in the U.S., the president announced that he was putting off a decision on Huawei, that technology company, keeping businesses in limbo about whether or not they can resume doing business with Huawei. And that had direct impact, according to the White House and others, on the currency devaluation or the perceived currency devaluation on the part of China. So it really does feel like a tit for tat moment by moment.
You are right on target. So the two strong personalities are going to continue doing just exactly that. You do this, my reaction will be this. And with them having an agreement, they can do what they want. And so China is going to, as you asked, probably have the upper hand.
You mentioned the yield curve. I was watching this very closely. It's when we talk about an inverted yield curve, that's a big recession signal, or is it?
It absolutely is. The 2-year to the 10-year is the yields that most of us watch. That has been traditionally the telltale sign of a pending recession. We have multiple economists reporting different outcomes of a slightly inverted yield curve. With it only being off by 9 basis points, it is a leading indicator of recession. I will tell you that I believe that, and our firm is, as I mentioned prior, we are a little bit more conservative based on that yield curve indicator.
So we want to talk about where we might position ourselves for investments in our portfolios. I want to do that when we come back, Susan, so hang on with us. Susan Silvest on with us this morning, Chief Investment Officer at Murphy and Silvest in Dallas. Susan, earlier we briefly mentioned the Federal Reserve. This week there were a couple of Fed speakers out there, including Chicago Fed President Evans, who said that we may need to see more in the way of cutting by the Federal Reserve. What do you hear on the street, and is that something that we'll probably see at the next meeting?
I do believe that we will see a continued rate cut going forward. The question on the street tends to be whether it will be 25 basis points or 50 basis points. That tends to be a lot of the mantra that we're having bantered about. And my personal opinion is we probably ought to lean toward the 50 basis points in an effort to try to settle our rates against global rates. We are dramatically higher than the global economy, and that just simply won't allow for exchange in a global situation for our goods and services to be deemed a positive scenario. So that would, if we don't work in line with global rates, we are seen as someone who is not a favorable investment from foreign investors.
Let's talk about that in just briefly, where other countries are concerned and their rates are concerned. Have they been successful in stopping the weakness in global growth with their rates or not?
It doesn't appear that they have. When we have countries with negative interest rates, you do get concerned that how low can you go? Of course, that's another conversation that populates everyone's conversations. And how low can you go? How long can you sustain negative interest rates? So we have countries that are going into recession because they are trying to do so. We have here at home, we have the 2 years so low that it doesn't even keep up with inflation over a 10-year period of time. So you have purchasing power erosion right here domestically. Those things are not sustainable long term.
So it begs the question, as we look at everything that we've been talking about today, what is the best strategy? Are there places where investors are making money? What should we be doing with our portfolios?
That's a really great question, because what we're trying to do is remain focused on long-term money. We really believe in domestic positions. The United States still seems to be the best place in the world to place your monies. So what do? The hard part is there's no place to go right now. Most people are accustomed to flowing directly to the fixed income market, and that seems to be absent of any kind of reward at the moment. So I would urge investors to continue to look at a broad-based domestic portfolio and maybe go back into the market with any kind of funds that they have as we see the pullback. And should a recession occur, keyword there, do not panic. Do not overreact. Historically, we have recovered from those kind of situations, and there's no reason to believe that we wouldn't going forward. So what should investors do? Look at keeping their risk tolerance in line, not getting too aggressive either on the fixed income side nor on the equity side, but add that global component. You do need a well-diversified portfolio to endure almost any economic challenge.
Susan, have you seen anything from earnings so far that either surprised you or causes you reason for concern? I know we've been talking a lot over the last 24 hours about Kraft Heinz. I mentioned the Mondelez stock quote earlier, some of these staple stocks that people rely on. What are your thoughts on what's happening, and what are the surprises, if any, you've seen from earnings season?
Kraft, of course, as you mentioned, is probably the biggest surprise. We have Disney doing well. We have Lyft and Uber struggling. Not a surprise. Startups tend to have starts and stops. So Uber's having a bit of a challenge. Lyft, of course, one day will become they proclaim that they will have positive earnings. So some of the stuff that's starting to maybe cause you to pause would be such as JCPenney possibly being taken out of the lineup, things of that nature. So, yes, I think the Kraft one was a bit of a surprise. I would go that direction. But they have an opportunity to reinvent themselves and to find themselves attractive in the current marketplace and developed more appealing products and solutions. So I think that they will do so well. But you have Frito-Lay. They are still extraordinarily successful, for example, with Cheetos. Who would have ever thought that we cannot manufacture enough Cheetos to meet the demand?
That's good. And that's probably music to the corn farmers' ears as well to hear that news. And as I look at the list of Midwest and Chicago and Illinois stocks that we follow every day, yesterday seemed to be a pretty good day. Almost all of them are in the green, with the exception of a few. So there is money to be made out there.
There is money to be made there. And what you want to reserve the facts, you just do not want to get consumed all of the headlines. You want to remain focused on what you're trying to accomplish personally and try to, you can watch it, but I encourage people to step away and go do what you do well, and that is either enjoy your life, earn your money, enjoy your family, things of that nature, and understand that overreaction is your enemy.
Very good advice this morning, Susan. We appreciate you being on with us. Thank you. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. Do the same. I've enjoyed our time together. Thank you.
Thank you. Susan Silvest, Chief Investment Officer at Murphy and Silvest. You can find them online at murphysilvest.com.
Now, WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. It's our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. Time to shift our focus to the business of aviation and travel. With us is Madhu Unnikrishnan, the editor of Skift Airline Weekly. Madhu is with us from New York on Skype.com. To have a little conversation about a couple of things this morning. Madhu, first I want to talk to you a little bit about the latest quarter of earnings, quarterly earnings from the airline industry. I know there were some predictions of potential weakness in the quarter, but none of that really came to fruition, did it?
First of all, thanks for having me. The first quarter, you're right, there were some concerns. I mean, there were always concerns about whether the economy would hold up, whether trade wars and, you know, tensions around the world would cause companies and tourists to cut back on travel. But none of those fears came to pass. The second quarter was really a bumper quarter for the U.S. airline industry. Almost all the carriers that have reported strong profits and some, you know, record traffic. It's just been a really, really good summer for airlines here.
I know that some of the airlines have been doing some different things with pricing. The demand is one thing, but some of the pricing that some of these companies have been doing is also helping, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, some of this is, you know, it comes from the MAX grounding. There's less capacity in the system, or there are fewer seats. So airlines have been able to charge higher prices for that and other reasons. And just demand has been really strong. So airlines have been able to get away with higher prices and higher fares. And also, you know, there have been some innovations that have sort of taken root in the last year, like basic economy fares, which just get more people traveling.
So you mentioned the 737 MAX earlier. I want to delve into that just a little bit more. Talk to us about how 737 MAX impacted earnings across the board in a general sense.
Sure. I mean, one thing to remember is that the MAX in the U.S. still is a really small part of the overall fleet. But where it has affected carriers such as United, American, and Southwest, which operate the MAX, is that they've had to replace some business fares. You know, they've had to. So, like, let's say somebody booked travel for 6 months ago for a business trip. The airlines have had to replace some of that capacity by, you know, because they have fewer seats operating. They've had to, they've lost out on some close-in bookings. I mean, it has affected. I mean, the thing that we've seen with the three airlines that reported the MAX is that it has affected operations, and it will affect operations going forward as they plan to have more MAXs in their fleets by the end of the year. But right now, the effect is relatively small. So, but I think it's something that definitely we have to watch for the rest of this year and early next year as the grounding wears on.
Any surprises from the quarterly earnings that you've seen so far? And as the airlines talk about the next quarter coming up, what kinds of things are we looking for?
Well, you know, they predict demand will be strong. I mean, one thing that I am surprised by is how international travel for, you know, the big three U.S. carriers, American, Delta, and United, has remained incredibly strong in the face of all, you know, so much uncertainty in the world, trade tensions and Brexit uncertainty and, you know, slowing global economic growth. Companies still are flying. Companies are still buying buying tickets to come to the States, and U.S. companies are still flying to, sending their employees abroad. So that, to me, has been the most surprising aspect of the second quarter, and I don't see – it's not forecast to change for the balance of the year.
Let's talk a little bit about whether or not you carry on luggage or check luggage, and whether or not this makes you, because there, you know, among travelers, this is either you either do it or you don't. And I think people kind of judge me when I check baggage. Is that real? Is that really happening, or am I just imagining that?
Oh no, you're not. And you know, it's particularly a problem in the when you're a reporter on the airline beat, where there's sort of a people take a lot of pride in saying, oh yeah, I was on a 2-week reporting trip and I took just like 2 shirts and stuffed it into a backpack. And I get a lot of judgment because I like to check my bags. I like to board the aircraft with a couple of magazines and a book and a bottle of water. And and for doing that, there's a fair number of my colleagues who think who judge me.
Yeah. And I bet you Brian Summers is one of those who is probably judging you, because I know when I talk to him about it, I feel like he's judging me when I check baggage.
Oh, he judges me. He's told me that that's not the way to fly. I tell him, you know what? I've been doing this longer and I'm older and I've learned my lessons.
So let me ask you this. Are there specific trips or specific flights or specific destinations where one approach is superior to the other?
Yeah, actually, and I came in, I had this experience recently. Now, as I mentioned, I like to check my bags, but when I have under an hour to make a connection, I tend to carry my luggage on, and that's simply because I want to make sure I have it with me. I can race through the airport, and I don't have to worry about whether my bag made the flight. I mean, odds are it did make the flight, but it's just for my own peace of mind. So that's the really one of the few situations in which I'll check a bag.
I saw a report recently in the Washington Post where Tulsa Airport was singled out for always losing bags, especially on a connecting flight. Are there specific airports where this happens the most?
You know, I don't know. That's a really good question. I think the industry has been focused on doing a better job at tracking bags, and because it's been a major pain point for customers. So I don't know if there's one particular airport I would single out. That being said, whenever I've had to connect through Frankfurt, I make sure that I'm carrying my bag with me.
The Skift Global Forum is coming up. I believe it's coming up in September. It's always a good chance to see some of the big names in aviation. And I know some people have called it the TED Talks of travel. There's one story that I know has been on Skift.com about Air France and the KLM CEO. Let's talk a little bit about him and what he's been doing at that airline.
Sure. Ben Smith had a really good career at Air Canada and was responsible for a lot of the success of that airline. And that's what landed him at Air France KLM. Air France KLM is a difficult beast, though. I mean, it's Air France and KLM. It's two separate national carriers. They're private companies with their regional carriers, regional airlines and subsidiaries, and completely different working cultures, relations with labor, et cetera. I mean, everything you can imagine that, the complexity that comes from running companies in two very different countries. And, they're also very old companies with long labor histories and long, traditions, et cetera. So, he inherited a difficult job, and Air France in particular has had some contentious relations with its unions. All accounts is he's really taken an aggressive stance. I think, there was a realization by the companies that they needed an outsider to come in and reform them. He's taken an aggressive stance with labor and has struck some new agreements and is turning that ship around.
is the aggressive stance on some of these things, is this could this potentially be costly to his career, do you think?
Well, you know, word on the street, and I caught up with some colleagues on the beat in on the airline beat in Europe who work for European publications, who say that there is a kind of widely held belief there, or the rumors are circulating that he may have gone too far and has managed to anger both the French employees and the Dutch employees and the respective governments. Now, you know, this is just rumor, journalists like to gossip, but there's definitely a school of thought that thinks he might not be beloved or long for the job there. But, you know, time will tell. I mean, change is never easy, especially organizational change. So let's see how all the things he's started, how they play out.
He's scheduled to speak at the Global Forum, SCIF Global Forum in New York, September 18th to 19th. So let's hope he keeps his job through then.
Let's hope.
Thank you, Madhu, for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Madhu Unnikrishnan, editor at SCIF Airline Weekly. You can find them online at skift.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, a little weakness this morning in the futures market. Heading to the opening bell on Wall Street, Dow futures off 154 points, nearly a half a percent, nearly a half a percent lower on S&P futures, nearly three-quarters of a percent lower on NASDAQ futures this morning. Let's talk agriculture and commodities now. Orion Samuelson is with us for our regular Friday talk. Orion, good morning.
Well, good morning to you. And boy, is it a busy week for state fairs. We've got state fairs all over the place. And let me quickly go through the rundown. Wisconsin State Fair at West Allis. That's on through August 11. And then the Indiana State Fair will continue until August 18th. The Wisconsin and Illinois State Fairs running the same dates, August 8th through 18, and we'll be there on Tuesday for Agriculture Day and the Auction of the Grand Champions. And then the Minnesota State Fair is kind of the late one. That'll start August 22nd and go through the Labor Day weekend, September 2nd. So a lot of state fairs, a lot of county fairs still to be done as well. And have you made it out for a corn dog or anything like that yet, Steve?
I have not yet. I'm on a diet, Orion, and so I don't know that I could do that, although that sounds really, really good.
Bad time to go on a diet, know, right? At state fair, county fair time, because that's when you get the pork chops, and that's when you get, well, probably the most unusual fried food I ever had at a state fair was a quarter-pound stick of butter deep-fried.
Mm.
And that you got to look out for.
Absolutely. Orion, there was a report this week from the Federal Reserve St. Louis Fed, about farm incomes in the Midwest. In the last couple of quarters, was significantly lower. Talk to us a little bit about what farmers have been going through so far this year.
Well, they're blaming it all on the wet spring and the flooding that has really affected the attitude and probably the income of farmers as well, because that's what they say pushed prices lower and will continue to do that until we can recover. Now, the important thing is, on the report side of it all, on Monday, we will get the August report, and they have been resurveying the acreage planted since the June report came out and surprised a lot of people, because they thought they gave the corn planted acreage too big a number and that farmers didn't get that planted. And so the Department of Agriculture resurveyed 14 states to take another look at the planting acreage and also the yield potential and that sort of thing. That will be coming out Monday. And so the trading today, I'm sure, in the grain market will be with an eye on the numbers that will come out. Right now in the overnight trade, the December wheat contract is up half a cent. The December corn contract is up half a cent. November soybeans up 5.5 cents as the traders position themselves for, well, who knows what. We talked to a veteran trader yesterday, And guesses are all over the place on what it will say from the standpoint of acres that actually got planted and then the late planting and the impact on yield. Will the yield per acre number come down? So we'll be watching for that on Monday.
One of the bright spots of this report was that the income seemed to be stabilizing or at least going up a little bit at the end of the survey period, thanks to some trade, federal trade-related aid to farmers and corn prices going up.
Yes, the price of corn did increase. We had a pretty good rally in corn and hit some levels we hadn't seen for a year or so. And so that did soften a little bit the decline in income. But the Federal Reserve District in St. Louis and then further south, the Kansas City report, gave us some numbers the farmers didn't want to see, but that's dealing with the truth. A federal judge yesterday dismissed antitrust lawsuits accusing several large pork companies of conspiring to limit the supply of pork in order to inflate prices and their own profits at the expense of consumers and other purchasers. Chief Judge John Thunheim of the federal court in Minneapolis said the plaintiffs failed to show parallel conduct to support an inference that the companies conspired illegally. Companies that were defendants in that, Hormel Foods, JBS USA unit of the Brazil Home Company, and WH Group Smithfield Foods, as well as Tyson Foods, all included in that lawsuit that I think was filed about a year or so ago. But the judge in Minneapolis dismissed it yesterday, said the plaintiffs didn't have enough proof to show that that actually happened. Oh, and the other thing I have to mention about the state fair, it's become a popular thing. Well, it's been going on for years that at the Illinois State Fair and several other dairy state fairs, they actually sculpt a full-size cow out of butter. And so if you're going to the state fair, take a look at the butter cow. It's in the dairy building at the Illinois State Fair in Springfield. Always a major attraction at the fair.
All right.
We'll be there on Tuesday.
Great, Orion. Thank you, and have a great weekend.
And you do the same, and get off that diet and get out and have a corn dog.
All right, I will. Thank you. Orion Samuelson with us. Make sure you tune into the morning show tomorrow at 5 right here on 720 WGN. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook. Producer prices for July lead things off on the economic report today. Analysts see prices increasing 0.2% over June and 1.7% compared to July of last year. We'll also get China inflation data and the Japan GDP on the earnings calendar today. Among the companies reporting quarterly financial earnings, Tribune Media Company, the parent company of this radio station. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, August the 9th.